Need a quick hit of Marketing Smarts inspiration? Here it is. We have lifted portions of our Marketing Smarts episodes for those of you who need a quick jolt of marketing savviness right now. Refer to the description for how to find a longer form version. And with that, here it is. During COVID, when live events were shut down, virtual events began to emerge. And as COVID continued, like once wonky platforms became more sophisticated and accommodating, so people started feeling more and more comfortable with them. And now many are seeing solid success with virtual events, and it's really begging the question, do I still need live events?
Yeah, and we would just say there is value to live events. There's the human factor of networking, like Anne said, as well as the experience of seeing people actually live and in person. But there's no doubt at all that these events can get super pricey. So virtual events can be a good solution to allow you to engage with potential customers in an easier and really more economical way and more often, especially given the fact that they're popular now coming out of the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. And to help us dive deep into this topic, we have a special guest, John Kazarian, the founder and CEO of Excel Events. Hey, John, you want to introduce yourself?
Hey, thanks for having me on. You scared me a bit during that intro with the fear of live events. I'm a huge fan of live events. That's why I started the company. So there's certainly a happy medium between virtual and live.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, I'm John Kazarian. I'm the founder and CEO of Excel Events. We are an event technology platform here to facilitate every type of event, from virtual events through webinars to large flagship conferences, even field marketing events.
Awesome. So I'm sure we're going to be talking about a lot of those today. All right. So let's jump into it. First, how virtual events can spark your B2B marketing. You grow your credibility as a thought leader. And most, if not all of us, compete in a commoditized industry. Like, let's just call it what it is. And we can definitely say branding and marketing is a commoditized industry. I mean, we may have new lenses for which we see the world, or new things or approaches or techniques or, you know, channels that become the most popular ones to actually concentrate on now. But the concepts of branding and marketing have been around for a very long time. That said, a key way of differentiating in these commoditized industries is by becoming a recognized thought leader. And when people believe you know what you're doing, trust is built. And so a way you show that you actually have a pulse on the industry is by hosting an event. You create value for the people that are in your industry as well as you, right? And so this helps you to elevate your stature and your status by allowing you to take the lead on a topic that might be very, very important to your industry. And when you show up as that leader of that topic, then people start looking at you and thinking about you in a different way. They start kind of seeing you as a de facto leader or knowledge holder on this topic. And this is even true if you're a curator, right? So sometimes you may not have the solution, but by bringing around and bringing in people that are the experts, you start creating, again, a center of excellence or a center of value that people will then want to come to because you are the place that they can get that value.
Yeah, I mean, essentially to sum up what you just said, you win mindshare through content and community. And as you think about the mechanisms for creating content and community, events are number one. Events bring together you, your thought leadership, but as you mentioned, it brings in your network, the industry influencers, the other folks that are thinking about what's going on. And it helps you position yourself, your company, as the one that's bringing that forward, that's educating your customer base, your prospect base, your audience. And at the same time, you're creating opportunities for all of those folks to come together and learn from one another. And that's ultimately what it's all about that sense of community and helping us all evolve and grow.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you both bring up a lot of good points, but I think one thing it does is it allows you to provide the forum, but not have to do all the heavy lifting yourself. And so you get more credit, quote unquote, for the fact that you're providing the place for everyone to come together and bringing together the right folks. But that doesn't mean you have to be the voice in all the conversations. It doesn't mean that you have to own every single interaction. And so there aren't, I think, a lot of times you put a lot of investment into marketing channels and the payout may or may not be equal to that. Mm-hmm. This is one where I think you can expect that the value you are creating and the clout that you are getting is large based on the work you have to put in. And not to say it's not a lot of work. It's just that you don't have to handle it all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And let's not forget the fact that it's a great way to open up the door with potential customers, right? And I don't mean in the sense of inviting somebody to come and attend your event, but when you can reach out to somebody who's a potential customer and say, hey, we love what you're thinking about, we love what you're talking about, come share that with our audience, you're providing value to that person. And you're getting an opportunity to tell your story to that person in exchange for them participating at your event. It's a great way to build that relationship.
Yeah, and frankly, that's what we do on the podcast too.
Yeah.
So there's like multiple vehicles for that, right?
It works.
No, that's great. Great, great points. All right. Our second point for how virtual events can spark your B2B marketing is it creates a comfortable space for building relationships. So I come from the PR world at P&G, and I had to do a lot of events, all kinds of events, small events, big events. But the ones that kind of really stick in my mind is when I was doing dermatology outreach and I got to go to all these derm conventions. Now, that sounds like boring and laborious, but let me tell you, I've been to Hawaii a couple times. I was there in Vegas a couple times. These places were like always, it was always in some place really nice because derms never wanted to go to anything that wasn't nice, right? But the conventions were very much the same. So we had a booth, right? You had to man the booth. You had happy hours. So there was a lot of red wine and cheese balls, we called it, the red wine and cheese ball parties, right? And then you had dinners and you had golf. And these are really great social events that kind of come forth with people and kind of meet people face to face and maybe have like a very quick connection, but it didn't really, I don't feel like facilitated like long lead or relationship building generation that a lot of businesses need now in order to continue to help their businesses thrive. So you got that immediate like, oh, here's my business card, especially if I want to win something, right? You put your business card in a little pot to win something, or here's my badge to scan. And yep, you start generating your leads and you feel really good that you walked out with a bunch of leads. But then, you know, when you start to correspond with those people that you thought were, you know, hot leads, yeah, your materials go into their email inbox, never to be seen again. Heaven forbid you still send things through the mail that sits in a mailbox that probably nobody ever knows like where it's at. You never see those again. So I think like it's very interesting how the virtual event space has brought in like a new frame of mind when it comes to events. And a lot of people would say, well, virtual events are just so impersonal, right? You don't have that human connection. But I actually think that that's actually not true. And I use the analogy of our kids, right? Like maybe, well, you're still new to it. And John, I don't know if you have kids yet.
Not yet.
But like the biggest thing we'll say is like, if you compare like our generation to our kids' generation, like our kids are very, very comfortable sitting on their phones, having group chats, engaging in like, you know, any kind of like virtual forum and or any of those sorts of things, that it feels like connectivity to them. It feels like they're actually engaging with their friends more than actually going and seeing their friends, right? And so I kind of equate that to how virtual events are starting to kind of create this community where it's really great for people who may have a little bit of anxiety in like in those live events, or maybe don't have the time or the energy or the space in order to go engage in those, or if you're a little bit more introverted, because you kind of have like a little bit of veil of anonymity, right? Yep. So you can actually engage in the way that you want to engage, and it can be very passive, it can be very active. And I'll use an example, because I was just participating in a virtual event by the crew, and there was a keynote going on, and people were just flying comments back and forth in the chat. Oh, I love what you just said. Yeah, me too. Where are you at? I'm here. I'm there. Oh, we should connect. Like, that doesn't happen in a live keynote, right? Like,
well, can't.
You can't, right?
Right. And even if you look at that even like a little bit deeper, it's the threaded messages. It's not just that that conversation is taking place alongside what's being presented, but then you hit these points, these controversial points where there'll be like a thread going.
Right.
And that will mm-hmm. carry on for the entire presentation. You can't do that in person unless technology is there to assist. And we're seeing more and more of that.
That's interesting.
That's interesting. How do you see that come alive in those the live events?
Well, we're seeing with in-person events, in-person conferences, there's a 3x adoption in a mobile app for attendees as compared to 2019 levels. And I think that's for a couple of reasons. One of which is that event organizers have been delivering so much more insight and data to the rest of the organization that the rest of the organization has come to know and expect that at a time where events make up 25 to 40% of B2B marketing budgets. And well, we all know what's going on in the economy, so budgets in general are under scrutiny. The other part of it is that attendees have come to expect technology to play a bigger role in events. So they don't want to feel like going to an in-person event is a step back because they don't have access to something that they didn't have compared to virtually.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I think you're getting at the point of bridging the gap mm-hmm. and learning from both sides, learning from each other, basically, right? So I feel like, and you just mentioned the dollars spent, and I said it in the intro, but more critically than ever, given where the economy is, I feel like that scrutiny has to equate to richness that pays out the value equation that people are looking for. But then you also touched on the data piece of things, right? So if people are able to participate on their app while they're in person, and also when they're on the virtual event, you're collecting that data and able to share it back. And also, I think the real-time feedback is really interesting. So when the side conversations are going on, which I think some people would at first be like, well, they're even paying attention, but it's like, no, they're showing enthusiasm for what the discussion mm-hmm. is, and they're able to be engaged and participate in a way that they're not. I think a lot of times those of us who speak at live events stand up there and we're like, is this resonating or not? Right? So you have that feedback, whether it's immediately in the room seeing them engage or on the chat, and you have it working both ways. But I hadn't really thought about learning from both sides and leveraging what's working and making a more intentional experience, which then I think gives you a reason for when you're doing virtual and complementing that with in person and vice versa.
Yeah. And even to the point of hybrid events, right? There's yes. more and more content that's taking yes. place where there's an in-person presentation and there's an audience that's two times the size at home watching, and they want to engage as well. And they don't really care if the person that they're chatting with is sitting across the world or sitting in the audience at the event.
Yeah, it's a really good point.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how that all evolves because, I mean, I remember like the only virtual connects we had during live events would be like, you know, texting your person being like, oh, I can't believe that person just said something, right? So
right, but your network in that case was the two or three other people that you know that were right. there, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so now it feels much bigger and much more connective. So I think that's going to be very interesting to see, especially, you know, if you're interested in this, this is where you definitely need to reach out to John and have him help you walk through what technology can be implemented so that you can create more engagement, experiential engagement around even your live events. Because I think a lot of people still kind of are hesitant to engage in a virtual environment in a live event because it's just so foreign. They're like, I'm here to meet people, talk to people. So, you know, I don't get this kind of thing. Are you seeing that, John?
So it's interesting because if you look at the studies of event planners over the past 10 years, the questions around what is it that is their biggest challenge? Over the past 10 years, the answer has consistently been event engagement, right? We all thought that was the big thing when it came to virtual events, but the reality is nothing really changed. And now we have these tools at our disposal because Event Tech basically grew 10 years in 2 years. That help assist that. At the end of the day, look, technology is never going to, it's never going to solve the problem. The content's not good. If the networking opportunities aren't there, if the event design doesn't facilitate that experience, technology is not going to fix the problem, but it can certainly assist it. And that's where we're seeing organizations have a ton of success right now. The other aspect, and this goes back to your intro, is as you think about the meshing of those virtual experiences with the in-person experience, you're creating an opportunity for people to get to know each other virtually in an environment that, frankly, most people are more comfortable with today than walking into that ballroom or that function hall, whatever it might be, where you don't know anybody and you're awkwardly doing that dance of like looking at your phone, trying to pretend that you're too busy to talk to somebody. It's not why you're there. But you can set those meetings in advance. You can figure out who's worth your time, who has common interests. Let the technology break the ice. I mean, we've been doing it with dating apps for 15 years. Why should it be any different with events?
And now universities are doing it. My daughter just did that. That was part of the whole intro and onboarding for Mercer too. So I think a lot of universities are learning that as well. And it dramatically helps to kind of warm the entrance, if you will, so you're not going in so cold. So I love
right.
that.
Right. And to your other point around people just generally feeling more comfortable with it, the loudest voice, it's the loudest voice in the room syndrome, right? The people that have been complaining or dying to get back to in-person events are the ones the 1% of people that don't feel awkward in that ballroom.
Yeah.
Right?
So true.
But for everybody else, like, yes, it's fun. We want to get back. A lot of it's because we want to get back and see our friends. It's not that easy to meet random people. So events, virtual events, have just made events in general much, much more accessible. And not just accessible from the perspective of necessarily a disability, but they've made it more socially acceptable. And if we can break that ice, we can open the door for a lot of people and a much, much larger audience.
Still need help in growing your marketing smarts? Contact us through our website, forthright-people.com. We can help you become a savvier marketer through coaching or training you and your team or doing the work on your behalf. Please also help us grow the podcast by rating and reviewing on your player of choice and sharing with at least one person. Now, go show off your marketing smarts.